So very good. With that, I will call to order our virtual Zoom meeting of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, regular meeting of Wednesday, September 15th, 2021. It is just about 6 p.m. and this will be our call to order. So Ms. Simpson, if you do a roll call, please.
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Lee?
Here.
Director Karen Ray Ressam?
Here.
Very good. So we do have a quorum and we will proceed. And I'd like to invite Ms. Simpson to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very good. Thank you very much for doing that. That'll take us to our agenda review. Let's see if there is any director that wants to make any modifications to the agenda. Seeing none, we'll consider that consensus to proceed as published. And that will take us to our public comment for items not appearing on tonight's agenda. So let's check in with Ms. Simpson or AGP to see if we have any members of the public on the line for public comment tonight.
There are no public commenters.
Very good. We'll go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the board for the next item on the agenda, which is the consent agenda. There are two items tonight, which is the approval of warrants and the approval of the meeting minutes of August 4th, 2021. Let's see if any member of the board has any questions on the consent agenda. Ms. Ray Russell?
No, sir.
Very good. Ms. Gibson?
Sorry, no.
Very good. Then I'll go ahead and turn to Ms. Simpson and see if there are any members of the public on the line for public comment on the consent agenda.
There is no one on the line to give public comment.
We'll go ahead and close public comment on the consent agenda and bring it back to the board for a motion.
I will be happy to propose a motion to approve the warrants, item 5A, and the meeting minutes, item 5B.
And this is Director Gibson, and I reviewed the minutes and the warrants, so I will second that motion.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. Ms. Simpson, roll call, please.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Karen Ray Russell?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes, very good. We have an approved consent agenda, and that will take us to our action items tonight. First one is 6A, a quarterly update on the redundancy project. I will turn it over to Mr. Gent for his report, or at least an introduction of the report.
Yes, good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator, and we have our third quarterly update. And to kick that off, I also have Eileen Shields on the line with us. She's with MKN and Associates. They act as our project manager on the project, and they work heavily putting together this type of report. And so Eileen will be going through that, but I wanted to kick it off with a new drone flight. And so bear with me while I stumble through playing a video over Zoom. There's a couple nuances there that I struggle with. And hey, Spencer, if you're listening, it says host disabled participant screen sharing. So if you can increase my permissions, that would be helpful.
Can do.
As we bear through this, waiting to get that upgrade in. I will say that you'll see this video, and if you came out to the site today, just like 20 days later from when this flight was flown, substantially different. And if we fast forward to next week, some major concrete pours, and I'll kind of point this out as we see the drone footage where these changes are happening, but a lot of fast progress is occurring right now. So I do have the ability to share screen now and optimize for video clip.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's exciting to see the progress for sure. So yeah, the excavations, if you came out today, the rebar is fully laid out now. So they've formed up several of the walls. And so they'll be getting some concrete in starting next week to carry on. So with this, I'll introduce Eileen Shields. I am going to share my screen and pull up the staff report so we can scroll through that and look at some of the tables as she delivers the staff report. So with that, Eileen, I'll go ahead and share again and pull up the is that displaying okay for everybody?
Yeah, we can see the agenda packet.
Okay,
thanks for that introduction. Good evening, honorable board members. I'm very happy to be here tonight to provide this update and walk through some of the changes that have occurred since our last update. As you know, the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project will provide critical infrastructure that'll allow for major treatment processes to be taken offline for repair or maintenance as needed without risking violations to the effluent permit. The project was awarded in December of 2020 and notice to proceed was issued in January of 2021 to Phelons Construction Company. M&S is serving as the district's construction manager. They're out there day to day. They've provided a resident engineer on site that's monitoring the construction, the materials, the installation, the schedule, and all of these. And some of the executive summaries from their monthly project reports are attached to the staff report. Kennedy Jenks is the design engineer, as you know, and they are providing continuous services during construction in providing submittal reviews, responding to requests for information, attending weekly meetings with district staff, myself, and the construction manager and the contractor to talk about project progress. So this quarterly project update covers the months of May, June, and July. It's designed that way somewhat to coincide with the reports coming from M&S and also the pay application requests from the contractor. So I'll point out now, Mr. Gent's hovering over an error that we had in the staff report. I apologize for that. It's intended to be 203 days. For the contract time elapsed. It's showing 186, which I believe was there previously. And as the track changes went through and were accepted, we accidentally had that, both of those accepted. So 186 would be the days through the end of July, I believe, but I had updated it to reflect as of August 22nd, as it says down in the note, note two at the bottom of that table. So the contract time elapsed is 203 days through August 22nd, which was the time of drafting the staff report. As of that date, we have 696 days remaining in the contract. You'll note here, we've got one negative change order day. That was because district staff allowed the contractor to work through a district holiday. They were doing some minor stuff on site and district had staff on site as well. So the original contract duration is 900 days. Current contract duration with that one day that came back to the district in a change order is 899 days. The completion date per the contract is July 13th of 2023. At the time of this report, the contractor was projecting a schedule completion date of August 1st of 2023. So they were anticipating being 13 working days beyond the contractual completion date. It is a long duration, things change, and their report to the construction manager and district staff was that they're working to overlap future work activities by utilizing additional crews to make up for this anticipated overrun on the schedule. Preliminarily, we have seen updated construction schedules that are showing that. So they are coming closer to that contract duration. So we'll continue working with them on that. As far as the budget summary, these summaries were drafted on August 24th based on invoices received to date. And we're looking at a current earnings or current spend of $4.1 million. Change order of about 0.01%. That was an executed change order in the amount of $16,037.86. This was reported as a work change directive to the board at the last update. And it had been executed for a not to exceed amount of $27,508. It covered relocation of the wastewater treatment plant's waterline service, which ended up being discovered in a different location than was anticipated. So it wasn't where, you know, the district understood it was per the record drawings, and it needed to be moved to get out of the work area. So right now, we wanted to let your board know that we are tracking three potential change orders. They're in progress. They're all low dollar amounts, totaling less than $15,000 for a few additional items, unanticipated changes that occurred during construction. We will provide additional information on that when all the paperwork is in place, and we do have the information and solid numbers to report. As far as the overall project budget, we are tracking a little over $4.2 million spent to date, with a balance to finish of a little more than $26 million. The construction costs, we have about, you know, as reported earlier, $4 million spent out of the nearly $27 million. And professional services are closer to about half spent. I rearranged this table a little bit from your previous report to indicate the contract change order. So although as those, the three previous potential change orders that we noted are tracked, they'll come into this table as well. And then we have some other construction costs that we're tracking. That's in the fifth line down. And those are totaling up some PG&E service costs and some fees from OCSD for the water service. So as far as a summary of the work that's been completed, you saw, you know, huge changes to the site in that drone video. To get to that point, the contractor, you know, since our last report, had continued potholing, installed the dewatering system that started in May, which includes several wells, piping, a desilting tank to pull some of the dirt that's drawn in with that groundwater. The desilting tank allows that to settle to provide the clarified water that mixes with the district's effluent and heads out the outfall. So there's also a booster pump to move that water, controls, alarms, backup generator. Compaction grouting was performed in May. That helps protect the existing facilities from the large excavation and the dewatering, potential settling that could occur from that. And they started installation of the vibratory stone columns. A lot of electrical work started up in May as well. So there were a lot of conduits and handholds going in all throughout the site. and the contractor and their electrical subcontractor were coordinating with PG&E and AT&T for relocation or abandonment of the utilities that were in the work area. Also in May, they have a couple surprises happened. One of the wastewater treatment plant's existing communications conduits and the one inch water supply line were damaged during excavation and potholing. The contractor jumped on that right away, repaired the damage at no additional cost to the district. So comms were down for, you know, a portion of a day. District staff can speak to that, but they communicated quickly and got it repaired. In June, installation of those vibratory stone columns were completed, and that's a huge amount of rock and effort went into the ground to help provide a solid foundation for the large structures that are being installed. So that was completed. They also came back after they got those columns in and completed shoring and piles for excavation. The dewatering system was completed in June, ended up being 19 dewatering wells to pull the water down sufficiently in order to complete that work. All the concrete and everything that's going in below normal groundwater levels. And so that dewatering system began full-time operation at the end of June, about June 25th. So we've been watching the volume and the quality very closely on that, and it's consistently within the allowable volume. We had specified a limit of 1 million gallons per day that could be taken without concern from district operations. There's daily water quality sampling that's occurring on that as well. And they reached about a depth of 8 feet in the main work area by the end of June. So July, the majority of the work was, you know, continued dewatering to get that water down so they could move further into that excavation, which occurred successfully. They started, you know, more earnest at the excavation as well. Sheet piling and shoring was completed. They had paused until they got all the dewatering down sufficiently to complete the sheet piling that would be needed for the shoring and excavation. July 20th, we had another bit of a surprise when the contractor and the construction manager saw some voids and cracking that started happening adjacent to the sheet piling wall near the district's existing primary clarifier 2. So the construction manager stopped the excavation right away. They backfilled. They anticipated that the water wasn't low enough. And so as they were moving some of that soil, the water started moving some of the soil along the shoring wall. And caused some voids adjacent to that structure. So to protect the structure, they put it back, put in a monitoring well, waited until the water was down low enough that they felt comfortable that they could continue that excavation. They also ended up installing a lot of larger diameter rock to help shore up that area and protect the primary clarifier. So since that dewatering ended up taking a little bit longer than they wanted, they submitted a request for information and asked to proceed in a phased approach with the excavation and installation of the load transfer platform, which is some of the subgrade support at the bottom of those structures. So while they waited for the water to come down in that one area, they moved on to the other area. The construction manager and design team looked at that, talked about it with district staff, and didn't see any issues with it, took no exception to the phased approach. And so that's how they proceeded. They continued dewatering, they moved forward with that phased excavation and started installing the load transfer platform for the secondary clarifier. You probably saw some of the equipment and large diameter pipeline in that video. They had some of these later bullet items under July. So they installed the 36-inch mixed liquor pipe and the 18-inch return activated sludge pipe. Those are two, the major piping that goes in underneath the secondary clarifier. And then electrical conduit and vaults and installation continued throughout the wastewater treatment plant. So work that was anticipated for August, they projected installation, completion of those piping that I mentioned underneath the secondary clarifier and concrete encasing of those pipes. They did install the pipes. The concrete encasing is pushed to September. They formed and poured the center footing of the secondary clarifier number 2. And they did complete excavation of the aeration basin and the load transfer platform. They started work on the load transfer platform for the aeration basin. And then they were anticipating to start the installation of electrical underground for the blower building. But that has been pushed to September as well, but they're continuing with other work. So they're, as different things come up during construction and materials availability and labor and all that, they're doing a really good job of being able to shift to other work areas and keep moving on the construction. We included an additional topic in this report. Just wanted to bring to your attention some areas of risk for potential future cost increases. You can break the project down into, four main areas. There's the construction cost, construction management, engineering services during construction, which is your design engineer, and then administration, which is district staff as well as MKN. Construction costs is by far the largest portion of the project cost overall. And probably, with that brings the largest risk for potential increases in costs. We've been communicating regularly with the contractor and with the construction manager to track that and, ask about materials availability and substitutions and these kinds of things. It's remained relatively stable. As you see, we've got a change order to date that's less than 0.01% of the construction, and the three potential change orders that we're tracking are not much more than that. But there's 700 days remaining in construction, so in the project. So, and it is an underground project. We have $3.1 million in contingency available. On the construction management, costs to date are unchanged. They're utilizing their anticipated budget relatively steadily, so we're not seeing lots of fluctuations in those costs. We only anticipate risk there if the construction contract experienced significant delays. You want to have staff out there supporting the district and maintaining oversight on the construction if that occurs for some unknown potential reason. Engineering services during construction is associated with the contract with Kennedy Jenks, your design engineer. And as I had mentioned before, their work during this part of the project consists of submittal review, reviewing and weighing in and responding to requests for information on the plans and specifications, making sure that, if there are issues that the contractor brings up or concerns or proposed changes, that the design engineer is looking at that thoroughly and weighing in to protect the district. So typically, your costs for that type of work are high at the beginning of the project when the contractor is wrapping their arms around everything and digging in and getting those product submittals in and coordinating with manufacturers and such. And then they tend to lower throughout the construction, but we are seeing an increase in the assumed rate of expenditures for Kennedy Jenks to date. So I don't have all the numbers in front of me right now as far as percent increase, but we wanted to bring it to your attention that there could be some increases in those costs coming forward. We're gonna be talking with Kennedy Jenks as well as M&S to get a handle on anticipated future submittals and the number of those, the rate of the number of submittals and RFIs to date, and you know, kind of what we anticipate moving forward. Administrative costs associated with your contract with MKN, we're well within budget to date. And again, like the construction manager, you know, risks for increases on that contract would be tied to an extension of the contract duration if something unforeseen happened and construction took significantly longer than expected. Okay, so overall, the project costs are consistent with the budget. There could be some increases. We do have a contingency on that professional services cost within our budget. And so we'll be working with Kennedy Jenks on that to see what those potential impacts are. But to date, we're well within the district's budget. It's being funded through the certificates of participation and the partial loan from USDA. So that concludes the report. There are additional details and some photos and the construction manager's executive summaries from their monthly reports for the three months that are covered, as well as details on the cost being the last attachment.
Very good. Thank you for that report, Ms. Shields. Let's see if there's any questions from the board on that. Ms. Ray Russum, any questions for Eileen?
Yes, thank you. So I'm looking at the Zoom, so I'm going to bring up so basically my question is on that second to last paragraph. I think I'm trying to navigate there right now because I was enthralled with your presentation. In terms of the risks of where this could go sideways, you talked about the ESDC. I remember what that stands for, but I can't say it. And that appears to be the greatest risk for, at this point, things going, I don't want to say sideways because that's not the right characterization, but for some additional cost. Can you just expand on that a little bit about why that there is risk there? It seems to me, I'm going to preface it by saying, when we went into this contract, there was a lot of concern about the contractor themselves. And now we're talking about the management of the contract being the place that it's going to go sideways. Can you talk about that just a little bit?
I'll go ahead and take that, Eileen, at least initially, and then Eileen can maybe add some to it. So what we're seeing, Director A. Russum, is an additional frequency of requests for substitution and material replacements in the contract. That's one of the reasons, and that's largely driven by the global pandemic and supply shortages. And so Phelons has been under the gun to honor their bid prices because they don't really have a path out of their bid prices, out of their bid prices. So they've made additional requests to substitute materials and ask for information on how they could do that. And so what we're seeing is, to keep the project on schedule and be a reasonable steward of the district funds, we have to balance this and make sure it's done tightly and right, but we still have to acknowledge that we're dealing with the global pandemic, and the supplies that were available when the project was bid might not be the same supplies that are available today. And so what they intended to buy is no longer available. And so they have to say, can we use this? And as the district, we have to say, we need to check with our designer to make sure it's okay to do that. And so that's where Kennedy Jenks gets involved and verifies that, yes, this substitution is adequate to perform at the plant.
I see. Okay, that's plenty. Thank you so much. So Eileen, I don't think you need to weigh into that unless you have something substantial to add, but that helps. And I really want to get this into layman's terms so that when people listen to this, presumably, that they'll kind of have a little bit more of a nutshell of why that's happening, which leads me to my second question. So it's a little loaded. And, you know, we went into this contract with a little bit of political pressure of whether or not this was going to save money or keep us on track or what that looks like in terms of the CWA. And so my question, again, it's a little loaded, which is, we've got the tiniest amount of change order. I know we're fiscally only about 15% into this project, but is there anything in the CWA that is contributing to any of these pressures that could come to bear? It sounds to me like they're not, and they're based more in the market and the global market and what's happening with COVID, but I just want to double check.
So I can characterize the CWA, the Community Workforce Agreement that we adopted on the project, as having no noticeable impact once it's been implemented from the district standpoint. Now, the contractor does have extra steps that they have to do in dealing with the trades and bringing folks on, but they've been able to secure labor. We did get our first labor report to see the breakdown in late July of how we're doing on local hire versus out of town hires. And it's a lot of data, and we don't really have anything to compare it to, but right now I can say that the CWA is not posing any hurdle or obstacle for the district to deliver the project, and we have been able to source a fair amount of our labor here locally.
Excellent. So is there any way, as we move forward, to get a little data on how much of this is staying local? I mean, that was really the intent of the majority of the board, and I'd very much like to be able to have that discussion with our ratepayers in saying that for me personally, I don't speak for anybody else on the board, but I'm willing to spend a little extra to make sure that money stays local. I don't know, we don't have any way to really know if that's extra based on what you just said, and I don't want to open up a can of worms, but at the same time, if we could get a little data on how many people we're employing or how much of that is staying local, I think that's worthwhile to report out to our ratepayers.
I'd be happy to summarize that report and bring it forward at the November meeting.
Yes. Thank you. I had to get my month straight. Yes. Thank you very much, Chair. That's the end of my question.
Very good. Thank you for those questions. And I would look forward to that information as well on that. So Director Gibson, so any questions for?
Yeah, I had just a couple. Now on the completion date, Eileen, you mentioned that the completion date would go 13 days over deadline. Is that correct?
Yes, at the time of writing this report, which was a couple of weeks ago, the contractor was anticipating a 13-day overrun. They've since brought that back some, and they're working with the construction manager to see if there are tasks that can be overlapped to reduce that.
I can't believe that they could project that far out, but interesting.
Yeah.
Does that allow room for Mother Nature or, you know, things like that? I mean, what if it actually rains in California this year?
Right. There are a certain number of allowable rain days within the contract. They cannot, you know, with a certain amount of projected rain, they can't be doing some of the construction. And so there's ways to handle that. It wouldn't result in a contract overrun. They'd be provided with a rain day.
Okay. And one last question. How did you arrive at the $3.1 million in contingency funds?
Yes.
Yeah, so do you have a way to anticipate what might be spent or?
So a contingency is you know, up to an agency and how much they want to hold and budget for a project, and is intended to cover unanticipated costs. We worked with district staff and the district design engineer to develop a recommendation. And we ended up, you know, based on the underground portions of the work that we view as being higher risk areas and some of the more, you know, average areas of work, we ended up with a recommendation of about 12.5% of the anticipated construction cost. And that's what the district decided to move forward with in their contingency budget. And at this point, all we can project is what, you know, we reported in the three potential change orders that we're tracking. So the contractor will alert the construction manager if changes start to occur. You know, one of the ones we ran into was a valve on an existing pipeline was not where they thought it was, and they hit it. And so part of that change order, it wasn't the contractor's fault. It wasn't really the district's fault, but it happened, right, and it needs to be repaired. Right. So we start tracking that as soon as they come to light.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those questions. I didn't have anything specific beyond what has already been asked, so I appreciate the report. I will check in with Ms. Simpson and see if there's any members of the public that have joined us that want to speak on this item tonight.
There are no participants that would like to speak.
Very good. Then I'll go ahead and close public comment on this item. And I think this was just a receive and file, so we can kind of consider that one complete. And we can move to our next agenda item, which is item 6B, the District Administrator and Plant Operations Report. So who wants to start this one?
I'll go ahead and kick it off and turn it over to Mr. Jones. So good evening. I think I'll do this without pulling it up, unless, do you guys like having the text displayed while I'm talking, or thumbs up?
Doesn't matter, I have it open.
I'll just, yeah, it's a short update. So redundancy project, obviously the quarterly update was provided, so I don't have an additional update in my administrator's report. Central Coast Blue, when I drafted this, there was no update, but perhaps under board member communications, would you like to give us an update? Yeah, okay. And then some miscellaneous items. I'd mentioned in the past that the plant was audited by the Regional Water Board back on June 29th. They reviewed several components of our operations, and including previous violations, plant conditions, our preventative maintenance programs, our standard operating procedures, our lab conditions, all of our chemical storage. And they generated a report based on that. And I'm happy to say that there were no findings, no corrective actions issued, which was new for the district. Typically, there were some corrections to be made. And so we got kudos from the regional board on the state of the plant during that audit. So I'd like to thank staff and Mr. Jones for keeping the plant in good order. And also kudos to, I mean, Philance was fully in construction with all of their stormwater prevention stuff laid out on the site. So there's a lot for them to see and a lot for the auditors to maybe take issue with, but no issues were found. So that was a success as far as I'm concerned. Next item, staff is recommending the board consider canceling the October 6th meeting. Some board members and alternates have been invited to participate in, I believe, the South County Chamber of Commerce Awards and Recognition Dinner on the same evening of October 6th. Staff is recommending canceling that meeting and reconvening at our regularly scheduled meeting on November 3rd. But I would like the board's input on that. And then the last miscellaneous item, we had a district email outage. I think most of the board was familiar with that, but I did want to let the public know if something weird happened from August 24th through August 31st, just short of a full 7 days. It was a result of Spectrum at the national level having a failure in a migration of domain names. So the SSLOCSD domain name went down and was dark. So we didn't have email and lost some communication. I can tell you it was very frustrating from my part because our IT and me calling to Spectrum National trying to get this resolved was just like crashing into a brick wall over and over again. But finally was able to get it elevated. Each time we called, they would elevate it to a higher team, and we were finally able to get it addressed. Some plant tours, the SLO County Public Works Department, they have a groundwater sustainability group. They brought 12 county employees, and Mr. Jones was kind enough to give them a tour of the plant and the construction project. Couple of tentative items, just a tentative item. We will be, we anticipate presenting our annual audit at the November 3rd meeting. And there will be other items too. I just had not projected them out that far. And then also I should note that attached to this is the Regional Water Board's report if you'd like to review what their findings were during their audit. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Jones or take questions.
Actually, let's see, just real briefly, Mr. Jones, see if there's any questions from directors before we head to Mr. Jones. So, Ms. Ray Russell?
Just very brief. Do you need a motion from us to cancel the October meeting?
Our bylaws just require that me and the chair agree to cancel the meeting. So with the chair not, legal counsel, where'd you go? I don't know. I think I can cancel just with a conversation with Linda outside of the meeting. So I don't think I need action, but I did want concurrence because it was not necessarily my issue that was canceling it. So that's maybe where I wanted discussion or thoughts if that seems like appropriate course.
I'm just fine with it. I just want to know process.
Okay.
Let me go ahead, Wayne. Sorry. No, I think no motion because you don't have it agendized as such. It's just an informational item. And I think with the chair, they can do it and cancel it, especially if you have no items. You can always, under the Brown Act, cancel it at any time. So if you have no items, you don't have to take a formal motion.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And my second, it's not a question, it's a comment. And I just want to acknowledge staff, that's huge. And that report is amazing. And the fact that we have such light agendas right now and that we can cancel the next one and that we had this audit that came back clean, this district is in a decidedly different place than it was 3 and 4 years ago. And I always want to shout out to our staff and truthfully to this board for the stewardship that has got us here, that we cannot just let go and not take a moment to say thank you for that and all that hard work and all the just solid staff work that goes into the stewardship of this plant. And I just want to say thank you and I want to recognize it. You all make us as elected officials look good. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll definitely send your thanks to staff as well. Thank you.
Very good. So let's check in with Ms. Gibson before we kind of move on to Mr. Jones for his report.
Hi, I don't have any questions, but I think I know what Linda's response will be to canceling. So,
okay. Very good. Then, and I'm in agreement with my colleagues with respect to the October 6th meeting, and especially with the comments about the thank you to staff. And I did neglect to thank Ms. Eileen Shields for her report and the work that MKN is doing on on behalf of the redundancy project. So yes, definitely appreciate that report. Appreciate all the work that staff is doing to keep us on track and to be the good stewards of the taxpayer and the community's funds as moving forward. So very good. So after Mr. Jones's comment, we will see if anyone's joined us for public comment, but I'll turn it over now to Mr. Jones for his operations report.
Thank you. I can't currently share my screen, so I'm just wondering if AGP video can give me permission so I can share the plant operations report. It's blurry, Jeremy, so I can't really see it. I'm not exactly sure if it's my Surface or...
Michael, it looks good from here.
Yeah, it's perfect.
It's kind of...
You are muted, Michael.
I was gonna say, Michael, we're not able to hear you. And we still are not able to hear you, Michael.
Want to use my computer? I have it. Thank you, Amy. All right, sorry about that, guys. All right. Okay. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. What is going on? I'm sorry, I'm getting like crazy pop-ups on my computer right now. I apologize for the delay.
And I'm not sure, Mr. Jones, if you just want to go ahead and proceed with verbally sharing your report.
Yeah, hold one sec. Let me.
While we wait for Mr. Jones to come back, I'll just do a quick shout out to the Five Cities Fire Authority with my changing color drink cup.
Okay, I'm gonna be using Amy Simpson's computer. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Okay, all right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. Apologies for the delay. Presenting the plant operations report during this reporting period, which is August 1st through August 31st. During this reporting period, the district's facility exceeded its NPDES permit limit for instantaneous maximum total chlorine residual on August 10th and a daily maximum fecal coliform on August 27th. The Regional Water Quality Control Board has been notified. All other process values were within permit limitations. The monthly data for August 2021, all of our numbers other than the two violations were, again, well within permit limitations. If you'll look at the August 2021 average for fecal coliform, it's 167, and that's due to the high fecal coliform that occurred back on August 27th. Regarding the exceedance, the district exceeded its NPDES permit limits for instantaneous maximum total chlorine residual on August 10th and daily maximum coliform on August 27th. Both exceedances appear to be anomalies and staff have still not been able to identify the cause of the exceedances. There were no operational abnormalities observed and all laboratory analysis were within permit limitations prior to and immediately following the exceedance. To mitigate reoccurrence, operation staff have worked diligently and have begun chemically enhanced primary treatment of both primary clarifiers. CEPT uses coagulants, which combine with solids and force them to settle more quickly. In addition, operation staff have performed a hydraulic flush of our fixed film reactor, followed by the draining and cleaning of the chlorine contact tank. Both
processes should enhance the treatment efficiency and assist with preventing further exceedances. And an additional item that we have started doing is with our fecal coliform, there is a potential that we could contaminate a bottle when we're sampling if the bottle were to touch the weir where we sample. So what we've also included in the operations weekly task is to rinse that weir down just to prevent any buildup from coming off and when we're performing the sample going into the bottle. No mandatory minimum penalty will be assessed to the district for either exceedances from the water board. Moving on, some operations and maintenance tasks that operations staff performed. We reviewed and marked underground service alerts, replaced number 2 water valve outside of the lab, reviewed plan for filling digester number 2 with water in preparation to bring back online, which our digester number 2 is fully back online as of yesterday. We prepared all piping, hoses for to troubleshoot eluteration pump. We removed and add piping and attachments. We began filling our digester number 2 with water, ran pump during work hours. We monitored the progress, changed out fittings at our eyewash stations, attended meeting to review, discuss our HMI and PLC programming standards for SCADA, troubleshot and determined faulty level meter at our digester number 2 sump. We replaced faulty sump level meter at our digester number 2 with a hydro ranger and control box for a temporary fix. We adjusted the meter set points to work with faulted parameters. Checked and replaced oil and filters for our air compressor. Reviewed scope of work, reach out to vendors to request quotes for confined space project at our headworks. We installed an AED to a visible location within the office. Reviewed plans and drawings for construction bypass for our construction bypass project. Worked with OCSD crew to remove a tool from our digester number 1 supernate tube. Some work orders staff completed. We rinsed all surfaces of clarifiers, deragged the primary sludge pumps, flushed all sump pumps throughout the plant, test ran our emergency generator and emergency bypass pump, inspected and cleaned FFR orifices and collected an oil sample from our distributor drive. We performed our monthly safety walk. We calibrated our backup chemical systems. Some preventative maintenance that staff has performed is plant carts, our digester mixing pump, our 6-inch trash pump, our clarifier drives, our water champ, our digester vacuum pressure relief valves, our front loader, our forklift, ISCO sampling units, and our Amiod filters. Staff performed some training on target solutions. That's an online database that gets assigned monthly. We did have one call out on August 19th at 12 a.m. We had a high wet well level alarm. Operation staff responded and found the influent pumps non-operational. The cause of the alarm was due to a failure of a UPS battery backup system, which caused the influent pump control system to fail. Operation staff were able to bypass the battery backup to bring the influent pump control system back to operation. The system has since been changed and updated to prevent another failure. Moving on, I added some photos of district staff just doing their normal operations or doing some work orders. In this photo, we have Chris Rigoni, Mario De Leon, and Billy Romhild, and they're doing our monthly maintenance on our fixed film reactor. And then underneath that is our chlorine contact tank. This was during our draining and draining and rinsing of our CCT. Staff usually typically comes early in the morning to get that completed. Let's see, moving on. This is Erica Frost. She's our lab director performing our fecal coliform analysis. And then in the next photo, we have Mario and Billy. They installed a new valve, water line and valves at our sludge beds. And those valves just, basically we add water to the sludge beds prior to adding our biosolids from our digester. So they repaired that line and installed new valves. And then in the next photo, we have Mario as well and Mr. Mike Arias. They're performing our monthly maintenance, preventative maintenance on our Amiod filters. This is our reclaimed water system. So basically the water system pumps out of the effluent of our CCT and returns that water back to the process or to the plant for like rinse water and also provides water to our pump seals. And in the final photo here, this is a photo of, can't really tell, I apologize. But we have, so this is staff in concert with OCSD performing the retrieval of a device in, that was dropped into our supernate tube. Thankfully, we were able to retrieve it and prior to our digester supernating. So it would have caused some issues, but we were able to retrieve it and avoid any issues. And with that, that concludes my report, and I'm able to answer any questions that the board may have.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Jones, for that report. So great, as always, to see photos, even better to see staff members in those photos, but you didn't get anybody's faces.
I'll work on that next time.
Everybody was camera shy. So let's see if the board has any questions. I'll start with Ms. Gibson this time.
Well, I just have to know, what was the tool?
It was a tape measure.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. So Ms. Ray Russell, any questions from you?
I have the same question. I was betting it was a cell phone, so I was wrong. But my other question goes back to, you said there was going to be no penalties assessed for the two exceedances. And it is my recollection that we get a certain amount of basically gimmies per year. How does that figure into where we are right now?
So we are currently at three violations. So you're able to get essentially four violations within a span of 180 days. And we are at three right now. So the next exceedance or violation would constitute a mandatory minimum penalty of $3,000 from the water. Okay.
And when does that, I realize it's a rolling window, but when do we get out of that danger?
So our last occurrence, I believe, was at the beginning of July. So basically it would roll over to the, I guess, the next violation that occurred in August would be January 4th.
Okay. So we're going to do
yes,
this, right?
Fingers crossed.
Yeah,
yes.
No strikes until January 4th. No more strikes. Yeah, that's the intent.
You hear me, Michael, right? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just playing. Thank you. I know that it's not intentional and I'm just playing with you, but thank you very much for the information.
Ricky, yeah, thank you for that information on both fronts. And I'll check with Ms. Simpson to see if there's anyone who's joined us on the line for public comment on this item.
She was muted, but she said there are no attendees. I can hear her.
Very good. Then I will close public comment on this item, bring it back for the next item on the agenda, because that was a receive and file. And actually, before we close that, I think I did hear consensus for Mr. Gent to work with the chair to cancel the October 6th meeting if necessary. And anybody have any concerns or comments about that?
No, I think it's a good idea.
Okay, very good. Then we'll let Mr. Gent work with the chair on that, and that'll bring us to our board member communications. And I know Ms. Ray Russom had something that she wanted to share.
I do, but before I get there, Jeremy, can you remind me how much money we save the district every time we cancel a meeting?
I don't have a full account, but when we were doing some of the AGP reduction, it was close to $2,500 a meeting.
Wow.
In my head, it was $3,000. So that's not counting staff time. So I suppose that's probably close. So I just wanted to mention that for our people who might be watching. So board member communications with regard to Central Coast Blue. It is no secret that that's been a really difficult negotiation over the last few years. And suffice it to say, democracy is really hard. And as I always say to my government students, democracy is not for sissies. And it was really tough. And I will give total credit to all three councils and all three city managers, who all come with a different set of priorities and a different set of things that they're trying to get done and different set of challenges with regard to water. And we all came in with different things. And in the end, Aurora Grande really had to put our feet down in terms of what we felt we needed to have. And kudos to everyone to be able to get there. So last night, the Aurora Grande City Council approved the, essentially, it's not technically a framework, but I don't know what the right word is. We don't have an official word. Proposal, whatever it is that the three city managers have come up with, I believe we're, if we all are understanding each other, we're in a place where we're all going to move forward. They're going to memorialize that in a proper document that we're all going to approve. But as it was presented to us, it met the intent of what we were asking for. And I guess I'll just say that in a negotiation, if nobody's happy, everybody's happy. And if nobody got 100%, then we did it right. And so we didn't get 100% of what we were asking for, but we got significant movement and it met our intent. And so Central Coast Blue will be moving forward with all three cities, I believe. And there are lots of things to solve going forward, but I think we're really in a good place. The significant change is that there will be a JPA that will run Central Coast Blue. And also Arroyo Grande's share of Central Coast Blue is significantly reduced, most likely to somewhere around 25%. So there are some, I guess, I don't know what the right word is, nitty gritty that will come with that in the next few months, but I think we're gonna get there. And so I look forward to going forward. So it's good news.
Very good, thank you for definitely sharing that. And I'll turn to Ms. Gibson and see if she has any board member communications that she wants to share.
Yes, for the OCSD, we're mainly focusing on our infrastructure right now, leaky pipes, and we are also in the process of doing the redistricting. So, and that's gonna take a while. Thank you.
Very good, thank you for those comments. And just a couple communications for me is that, yes, it was good to watch the City of Aurora Grande Council last night to go through the deliberations and to come to a unanimous consent on the Central Coast Blue process and the work that it took to get to that point is admirable under all three circumstances of the councils, like Ms. Ray Russell mentioned. Grover Beach is intending to bring back that framework for concurrence, for lack of a better term, at our, I think it's our September 27th meeting, which I think is our next meeting. And then I believe Pismo Beach will move forward with their concurrence as well, which then starts again that nitty gritty to formalize and finalize that, of which at some point, realizing this is a kind of a future discussion, bringing back in the Sand District into the discussion, and perhaps getting the OCSD to discuss that. But we've gotten as far as we can, I think, for this moment in time, and I think that's the right spot for that. Other quick communication from Grover Beach is that we have started the process to identify uses for the ARPA funds that each of the cities are receiving. And some of that work is going to go into our sewer improvements of our own infrastructure. And so we are looking forward to working with the district and making sure that our sewer line improvements don't hinder flows or provide better do end up providing better flows into the district system itself. So that's all I have under communications. I look to Mr. Gent to see if there's anything else he wants to share before we adjourn for the evening.
No, there'll be a cancellation notice forthcoming, and I'd like to congratulate your two councils on resolving the challenges in front of regionalizing a project of significant value and significant importance, and certainly is challenge. I sat in on a lot of those meetings, and it was difficult then, and it'll continue to be difficult moving forward, but I think the people that are involved will move the project to completion. So congratulations.
Very good, thank you very much. So With that, unless there's any other last minute board member comments, seeing none, I will consider us adjourned. Thanks, everybody. Good work tonight.
See you in November, everyone. Happy Halloween.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.